I'm just really taking in what you've said, and I've been thinking this for a while now, because the Sorry Day that took place last week, which was a live streaming effort, Irene, was basically for those people that were IT savvy, and it went out to organisations who could have a lunch break and listen in to a 30-minute live streaming. And if you're fortunate enough, you can listen to it on radio, because it was also telecast through this radio station and Noongar Radio for a half an hour. But the grief and loss issues, the people who didn't hear it or don't commemorate Sorry Day are the people that have been affected most. So we've got to take that on board, because Sorry Day is Sorry Day for those people that have been greatly impacted by this removal of the National Inquiry into the separation of Aboriginal children from their families, which became the Bringing Them Home report. Last week we commemorated the 25th anniversary. So the grief and loss of Sorry fell short from a government perspective. Well, we'll say sorry, but we don't necessarily understand the implications. What you're saying is sorry is a grief time, and a sorry time, because a lot of the people removed still are coming to grips with why they were removed, why they were taken from culture, why they couldn't speak their language. I think we need to hear more from that, because you were in the mix of it and interviewing all these people about their separation, and now we're still coming to terms with what does sorry mean, what does apology mean.
Well, we heard stories, and I mean, it would make you cry, but we heard stories of families who would hunt their children off into the bush so that they could avoid being taken. But then the mums and the dads would put, you know, when they used to have barrels of water in bush settings, put the barrels upside down over the footprints so that when the wind and across the sands wouldn't cover over the footprints. And that was all they had left of their children. So it was that tremendous hurt, grief, sorrow, sadness. And a care lady from Darwin actually put Sorry Day on the table, because this is how it made people feel.
Well, it's a real stinging point there, because our Stolen Generation Memorial at Wellington Square does just that. There's footprints in the concrete fading into the distance, and the artist was Sandra Hill. So reflects very well as to what you're saying about how damaging that was, that people saw their footprints and that was the last they saw of their children. And that should, obviously it does make you all emotional, and we're not going to sit here and cry, but our listeners should be aware of the trauma we're experiencing now, just simply by talking about this report, you know, of thousands of children being removed. And so that was one thing. So the apology came out of that. It was one of the recommendations from the Bringing Them Home report, was there be an apology. Tell us about that.
Yes, look, it did. It came out of the report. But for me, and I'm the child of a Stolen Generations woman, for me it was a little too long. It was, well, I can't even say a little. It was too long in delivering the apology.
11
it was
years
11
after the...
Years. Yeah, yes. And I mean, you know, to sit there and not want to make an apology because you were scared the country was going to be bankrupt in case there was any litigation.
Exactly.
You know, that's not a reason to hold back.
No. And,
now,
you know, yeah.
The other thing too is that people, for many, many people, it was really, really important that they heard from Rudd about the apology. That was tremendous for many people. But for me, my mother, my family, and many, many others like us, it was too little, too late.
Too hollow, too meaningless. So we're talking to Irene Stainton, who has had a lot of experience in government, both behind the Bringing Them Home report being tabled in on the 26th of May 1997, but also around the advocacy for the Apology Day on the 13th of February 2008. As you say, 11 years too late. Or, you know, the government's concern about litigation and paying out lots of compensation, and the apology was delayed and delayed. And I must apologise to you now because we've never talked about where your mum was. Could you like to tell us what happened to your mother and where she ended up?
Yeah, mum was in Sister Kate's in the end, but initially when she was taken from home, the family was working on a wheat and sheep farm in 2J, and she was offered employment at the big house, as they used to call it. But in the welfare files, it said you can't allow Helen, my mum, to go and work for the owners of the property in the big house, because in the evening she'd come back to the heathens.
Oh.
So she'd be with the heathen ways back in the camp with the family. So Mother Fairskinned was taken. She went to Magumba Mission.
Was it Moore River then?
Moore River Settlement.
Moore River Native Settlement.
Yes.
Now, listeners, remember, Moore River Native Settlement was depicted in the movie Rabbit Proof Fence. But sorry, yes, Moore River.
Yep. Oh, sorry, what's the name of that?
Magumba?
No, the Christian place. The Brothers.
Oh, the Christian Brothers. CBC or...?
No, the thing up there where they bake the bread and...
Eunorcia Mission?
Eunorcia.
Oh, did Mum end up there?
She went to Eunorcia first.
Oh, my goodness.
So Mother went to Eunorcia first and then across to Magumba,
Moore River
Settlement, and then... They farmed out the very fair-skinned children to Sister Kate's children's home over in Queen's Park.
Right.
So that's where Mum ended up over there.
We're going to take a break and go to a song. But talking to Irene Staten here, whose mother I've only just discovered was taken from her community, ended up in Sister Kate's orphanage, but before that, Eunorcia Mission, across to Moore River Native Settlement, and Sister Kate's, which was named an orphanage. Why was that? Because... No parents. That was a bit of a fallacy, yes.
That was a furphy, if you ever heard one. when we got Mother's Note of Welfare file, there were pleading letters from her mother and stepfather around, when can we get Helen home? And yes, they were contributing to Helen's livelihood and all the rest of it. But it was always, no, you can't go home because that's not your biological father, that's your stepfather, so no.
And touching on a very... emotional subject of Sorry Day and Apology Day, and we've done that now, so thanks for staying tuned. But we're going to finish off with a bit of a yarn now with Irene and what her thoughts are for the future. What now? We've got Reconciliation Week, we've had Bringing Them Home report, we've had the apology, we've now got the Prime Minister talking about the Uluru Statement being revived. We've got the Prime Minister, congratulations too, to the Labor Party. But sometimes you have to be a little bit cynical because they were involved in the Bringing Them Home report and the apology. I suppose we'll have to look at them, proofs in the pudding, Irene, as to what happens now. The truth, the Uluru Statement, and also a voice for us. But what do you see is going to happen now? What would you like to see if you had some wishes now as to how things will change? Been got a lot of good things around reconciliation, but what's your view on the future for the Aboriginal communities in our world?
Well, I still hope. I have a significant amount of hope for real change. Not change that can be recorded in a report that's delivered somewhere that never gets looked at again and disappears into the ether. Mm. I want to see real tangible benefits for our people, not only in terms of employment for our young people, because as I said earlier, that is actually changing, but some of the physical, some of the aged care facilities that our people don't actually have.
Mm.
So that's the area that I'm looking to have some significant change and hope for change into the future.
Well, I mean, for me, reconciliation is a 97%. We're less than 3%, the Aboriginal community. So we'd hope that with the reconciliation journey for a lot of the 97%, things will change. There'll be different attitudes, different goodwill. So we've got to hope for the future. So I'm glad you talked about hope. So Irene Stainton has been my guest on What It's Mag today on RTR-FM and Noongar Radio. What else would you like to say about where you see the future? I mean, you've heard me say today, I've got a granddaughter who's going to be electrician when she does her trade. I've got another granddaughter. I've got two granddaughters. She wants to be a carpenter. Would that have happened 20 years ago?
Definitely not. Definitely not. You know, the other thing too, Jim, that I'm feeling quite energised about is because there is so much change happening. I mean, you're talking about your young people. One of my grannies is a in a third year electrical trades apprenticeship. Yes. So there we are. So for me to see those things happening today is something that I never thought was going to happen in my time. In my time, it wouldn't have happened. Mm. But seeing all that change now. So you have to have hope for a better future. And I think our young people, we're getting young people coming through now, university qualifications. And it fills my heart with pride to see our young people winning these amazing jobs and doing so much better and able to be part of affecting the change that we're all working towards.
Right. Look, my guests are in state. We're going to say goodbye now. This has been a wonderful opportunity for you and I to catch up as old friends. And now you're a friend of RTR, FM, Moorish Mag, and maybe down the track we'll have another yarn and we'll talk more about the hope and the vision for the future. Not too long, I hope. So, Ired, really appreciate your time and taking the time to come in and upstairs to RTR FM and talking to our listeners both at RTR FM and Noongar Radio. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jim.